If you love politics, today is the day that you would want to be in Scotland. Second choice would be listening to this hour on Wisconsin Public Radio, because we're going to be talking about this vote. Scotland, as you probably know, is having a vote today that could break ties with the United Kingdom and become an independent state. The world would see the creation of a new sovereign state and the end of one of the most important political unions in modern history. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about the Scottish vote for independence, and it really is an incredibly fascinating story. So many people are expected to vote. They're in the process of voting. Polls should be closing 4 o'clock our time, with results coming in later in the evening. 4.3 million people, 97% of the electorate in Scotland, have registered to vote, including for the first time 16 and 17-year-olds. There's been a forecast of a turnout in excess of 80% at about 2,600 polling places, stretching from urban centers to sparsely populated islands and far-flung settlements in the Scottish Highlands. So we will talk about this and the complexity of this vote and this particular issue. And we're very happy to have our guest on the ground, actually, in Glasgow. He is joining us today by phone and has an in-depth and has a point of view on this, which is fine, because we're not, you know, it's not a U.S. election, it's a Scottish election. And so he is really keyed into the reasons for the desire for a break from England. David Miller is our guest. He is co-editor of Neoliberal Scotland, Class and Society in a Stateless Nation. He's professor of sociology at the University of Bath, England. And he joins us by phone from Glasgow, Scotland. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I remember doing a show on this a few years ago when it was in the news, and I thought, isn't this interesting? And nobody called, which was remarkable. So I would assume, now that it's very much in the news, that you are acquainted with the issue, because everybody's been chiming in. A lot of Americans have been chiming in, including the president, saying that he thought that they should stay with the United Kingdom. So what do you think? Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. David Miller, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good afternoon from Glasgow.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you there. Tell me, do we have any indication of what the turnout is in Scotland? Busy?
It's been very busy, yes. There were queues this morning at 7 o'clock in the morning when the polls opened, which is unheard of. And by 9 or 10, some polling stations were saying that they had already surpassed the number of people who would vote in a general election. So that's a huge increase on the turnout for a general election.
Isn't that something? And for the first time, 16-year-olds are going to be voting in this election.
Yes, 16 and 17-year-olds, and they have, according to the polls at least, been taking their time to make up their minds. Quite a high proportion of them in the don't knows until about a month ago, and in the last month or so they have quite rapidly decided, started deciding. That's one of the reasons why the polls have shown an increase in the support for yes in the last 2-3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. We've been reading in the morning's papers here in the United States that polls seem to indicate that no has the edge right now. Would you agree with that, or are you hearing something different in Scotland?
Well, no, I mean, the polls certainly are saying that. And what you had until about 3 weeks ago, you had a 10, 12, 15% gap between yes and no. But in the last 3 weeks, that's closed, and it's closed in every single poll that's been taken since then. So the polls are now clustering around, on average, 48 to 52, sometimes 49 to 51. So we're seeing a very close result, according to the polls. The question is, of course, will the polls predict the result correctly? And we don't know that for a variety of really interesting reasons. There's been no example of a referendum like this ever before, so there's no data that we can go on to compare. But also, the key thing is that 30% extra people are thought to be coming out to vote, so we're going to have a turnout of something over 80%, we think, which is up from the last Scottish election when there was 53% turned out. So that's an extra 30% of the population likely to vote, and we just don't know what they're going to vote. Now, there are some indications. Well, one indication I would say is that many people have been signed up on the electoral register for the first time. In fact, in the last 3 to 4 weeks, over 120,000 people have been signed up on the register for the first time. And we can be pretty sure that most of those people will vote yes, because it's the people who have been out registering them have been the yes campaign. So we know that some of those probably disproportionately will vote yes. But then we don't know the rest of the people who are turning out for the first time, whether they are, since they will be from the more disadvantaged sections of Scottish society, whether they will vote for the traditional party of the disadvantaged, which is the Labour Party, which is asking for a no vote, or whether they are so disaffected with Westminster politics and London politics that they will vote for yes. So that's the big uncertainty, and we just don't know what's going to happen with that. And the polls, I think, will not predict that, because the polls historically have found it very difficult to access those people who tend not to involve themselves.
David, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Edinburgh in Scotland.
And did this issue, was this an issue that you grew up with? Was there dinner table conversation about possible independence, or has it been, I know it's been around for a while, but has it been more recent?
No, I mean, it's a story, and we essentially, there was, first of all, what happened was that there was a pressure for devolution, for the devolution of some powers from London. And we first had a referendum on this before I was able to vote, when I was too young to vote, in 1979. And there was a majority in favour of devolution, but it wasn't a big enough majority. The rules said that it had to be 60% of the people who were registered to vote, and it wasn't big enough as a proportion, although it was a majority, to get the devolution. And what happened then was that in 1979, as some of your listeners will remember, that Margaret Thatcher was elected to government, and as a result, for the entire period that the Conservatives were in power in London, the subject of devolution didn't come up again. And one of the key reasons why, when it did come up again in 1997, when Labour were elected, was because the Scottish government, the Scottish people, became more and more disaffected with rule from London by governments that they didn't vote for. And I mean, in particular, that throughout that period, because people in Scotland thought they were being punished by the Conservative Party, that the Conservative Party became less and less popular in Scotland, so that in 1997 it was entirely wiped out, and even now, all these years later, it only has one MP in Scotland. So the pressure for devolution came really from disaffection from governments elected in London which did not represent Scottish public opinion. And so what then happened was that in 1997 we voted for a parliament with tax-raising powers, which was created in 1999, and really that's where the story of today begins. That the Scottish Parliament, created in 1999, started to do things differently to London, and in particular started to defend public services, education, health, much more than the Parliament in London wanted to or was able to. And so now people can see that there's a difference between having a Scottish Parliament and a London Parliament. That's part of the reason why people are going for independence, because they want to defend, in particular, the publicly funded National Health Service and free care for the elderly and free university fees, all of which are things which are no longer exist in England.
And the other side would say, those who say vote no on this, would say that Scotland simply can't afford what you just outlined. As wonderful as those goals may seem, that there are economic considerations here.
That's what they would say, yes. They would say that it's not affordable. And some of them would say that we need to stick together. People who want to defend public services should stick together north and south of the border, and that's the best way to do things. Of course, they would say, make those kinds of arguments. The question on the economics, of course, is a disputed question, and we've had a number of Nobel Prize winning economists weigh into the debate on both sides, and so you can see that there's a dispute about that, and that's part of the argument.
The vision that, from a cursory reading of what's been going on in Scotland and what the ideas are for a nation unto itself, seem to be extremely progressive. Perhaps one of the more progressive agendas that I've heard from just about anybody lately. It is really a vision for a country that takes care of people, a country that rids itself of nuclear arms, a country that wants free education, health care, et cetera, more in line, some have said, with Scandinavian countries. Would you agree with that characterization?
That's certainly what the Yes campaign has been arguing, and I think, you know, the negative view of this from the No campaign is that this is a kind of backwards and reactionary sort of nationalism which will result in divisions in Scotland and beyond. But really the main reason that people want to vote Yes is not because they want to wear more tartan or eat more porridge, it's because they want to defend social democratic values, and it's, you know, it's very clear that what will happen if there's a yes vote is that there will be a constitution for the first time. We have never had a constitution before, and in that constitution there will be a line saying that Scotland will be a country free of nuclear weapons. Now that's a dramatic change in policy, and that's a dramatic change, I think, on a world scale. A
yes.
country potentially giving up nuclear weapons as a result of a democratic vote. And the same is true also of the NHS. Now, it's argued by the No campaign that this is unaffordable, but really there is a very strong consensus, even amongst No voters in Scotland, that the NHS should be defended and shouldn't be privatised like many people think is happening in England. So yes, it's very progressive in modern terms. It's not a socialist prospectus, but it is social democratic, and it does nod towards and look towards social democratic countries like those in Scandinavia, where people say that we should look after each other, and we shouldn't allow the profit motive to be the main driving force in society.
I find it interesting, and perhaps you do too, I don't know if it makes any difference to people in Scotland, but here we are, America, and we had this big revolution against the British so many years ago, and yet today, even just a few hours ago, President Obama was saying that he hoped that people would vote no on this, that the United Kingdom would stay united. So many American politicians have said the very same thing. Doesn't that strike you as strange?
Well, not really. I mean, I think that there are key things which worry those in power in Westminster, and I think that's probably what's animating Obama's response. You know, they're worried about the role of Britain on the international stage. Mm. No campaigners have been saying Britain punches above its weight on the international stage, and I think some imperial pretensions notwithstanding, I think that there's some truth to that. But I'm not sure that many people in the world necessarily think it's a good thing that Britain punches above its weight, especially with the experience of the Iraq War, which most people in Britain and in Scotland didn't want to happen. And I think that whole question about whether Britain should be on the United Nations Security Council, whether it should be a member of the G8, and its role in international affairs in that respect, is put in question by this decision, if it's a yes vote. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why Obama is for a no vote, because he wants Britain to be the ally of the US in international matters.
Mm-hmm. What did you say, punches above its weight? That's a great phrase.
Yeah.
Must be a Scottish thing, huh? We're going to welcome phone calls for David Miller. I would assume that this go around, there are many of you who are finding this to be a fascinating political story, which indeed it is. 300 years they're together. There's been an inkling that there has been dissatisfaction, as our guest would say, since the time of Margaret Thatcher, when there was privatization. Some of the healthcare system, and it would appear from what I've been reading that Scotland wants to go on a more liberal path. It's not just a matter of Scottish nationalism, or perhaps this would have happened a long time ago. Hard to say where the vote will go today, but certainly the movement will be around. It won't stop that kind of movement. What do you make of this particular vote? What would be the ramifications? Would it create, as even Paul Krugman has suggested, some problems with the monetary system, with the European monetary system, which could affect the United States? Is it sort of pie in the sky hopes that Scotland can create this kind of state with equality for all? I want to talk about the immigrant vote, too, because it's been, you know, there's been this anti-immigration, immigrant feeling in many European countries. I have read that Scotland is welcoming immigrants, and I would imagine they'll be a factor in today's vote as well. It's really an interesting political story. So if you're following it, today is the vote. We will know by tomorrow what the vote is going to be. The polls will close at 4 o'clock this afternoon. They're open until 10 o'clock at night. So we'll begin to get some results this evening. Here's our phone number. Please join our conversation. Our guest grew up, as you heard him say, in Edinburgh. He is co-editor of Neoliberal Scotland, Class and Society in a Stateless Nation. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Bath, and he's joining us today from Glasgow, Scotland. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter at K Dunn Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There is a very special event taking place next week in Milwaukee, and I want to tell you about it for a few moments here because there's only one day left to register. It's our 2014 WPR Listener Dinner, Thursday, September 25th in Milwaukee. You can have dinner with Larry Mueller and with me, bid on silent auction items, and they have just rounded up some really good ones. Packer tickets, Harley Davidson gear. I'll be giving a keynote talk full of stories about doing over 10,000 interviews. That's a lot. Register now. Our registration is closing tomorrow at 2 o'clock, and we'd love to have you there. It'll be a great evening. You could even imagine. You can be at an event where you can have a conversation about Scottish independence. I mean, come on. That's good. So please register and go to WPR.org/Milwaukee. We hope to meet you and to see you there. And we're talking about the vote in Scotland today for independence. It's a very simple question that will be on the ballot, and that's whether or not Scotland should be independent, breaking their ties with the United Kingdom and becoming an independent state. And they expect huge, huge turnout in the country. What do you think? Let's go to your phone calls for our guest. And our number is 800-486-8655. David Miller, co-editor of Neoliberal Scotland, Class and Society in a Stateless Nation. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Bath, and he grew up in Scotland. Charlie in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, Charlie.
My question is two parts. First, why should a moderately liberal American voter care about the outcome of this election? Second, why should a moderately conservative American voter care about the outcome of this election?
Tough question. I mean, I think that Americans should be interested because it's a change, a quite exciting change in the makeup of the British state, which Britain has had an important relationship with the U.S. for the last 50 years, at least, since the U.S. became the most important state in the world. And I think it's important because it will have significant implications for U.S. security policy if we get rid of nuclear weapons. That's important, I think, both for conservatives and liberals. And I think it might encourage liberals that it's possible to engage in some de-escalation of the arms race, which it seems to be progressing all the way around the world. For conservatives, I guess they might not like that so much. But I think that there's nothing to scare conservatives or liberals here in terms of progress in the UK and in Scotland. This will be an experiment in social democracy where there is a movement towards a more liberal society. But it's not going to have any consequences in terms of any threats to the U.S. or anything like that.
Thank you very much, Charlie, for your call. We need to talk about oil for a moment and the impact of that North Sea oil. Is there a lot of it? Are other members of the United Kingdom worried about Scottish independence and they're getting the major share of this oil? What happens with the oil?
Well, yes, there is a lot of oil. There are different estimates of how much there is. The yes side says there's more than the no side does, although I think it's fair to say that the question about how much oil there is exactly is open to some dispute. Nevertheless, there is a fair amount of oil left, certainly tens of years of oil left, but the question is whether we should exploit that or not in terms of climate change, I guess. But I think the oil would mostly, although this is subject to negotiation, mostly go to Scotland, and that's one of the key things that has been said for 30 or 40 years now. In the 1970s, the Scottish National Party used to have stickers which said it's Scotland's oil, and of course that's one of the key things which will allow, the SNP says, allow Scotland to pay for welfare bills and the health service. But I think that's obviously part of the dispute, should there be a yes vote. I think that the more important issue here, and one which I think is not widely appreciated, is why it's so important, why the oil is so important, is because the UK is the second nation in the world after the US in terms of its indebtedness, its borrowing of money on the international markets. And that debt is secured in part on the oil. And if Britain no longer has the oil, it will not be able any longer to borrow as much as it can on the international markets. And that could have a really significant impact on the British government's ability to function as it currently is. Now, that's something which the Financial Times has been warning about, the paper of the business classes. But it's not something which has got much wider discussion. And I think that's a really crucial issue here.
And without the oil, would a Scottish state be able to take care of its citizens the way it would like to, with healthcare and college, et cetera?
It would certainly be more difficult without the oil. But I don't think there's many people who are arguing that the oil would not come to Scotland. It's a question only of how that's negotiated, and that's one of the fascinating things. If it's a yes vote, the fascinating thing is what will those negotiations bring? I don't know if your listeners will be familiar with this, but if there is a yes vote tomorrow morning, then there will be 18 months to negotiate all of this and to set up the institutions of a new Scottish state. And independence will be declared on a date already assigned in March 2016. So there's a very short timetable here for this whole process.
Mm-hmm. Mark in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I wanted to ask your guest whether he's considered an alternative route to securing the independence of Scotland and its ability to have the money it needs by considering forming a public Bank of Scotland. There's an article today in Truth Out, by Alan Brown, suggesting that in the same way banks just create money, a government can by having a public bank. And then the repaid loans and the interest can go right into infrastructure, all the things the government needs. That's my question.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Well, those kinds of arguments about public banks, about nationalising the banks which currently are there, we have there in Scotland, there are three key banks, all of which produce, I don't know if you'll realise this, but all of which produce Scottish banknotes, specifically Scottish banknotes, which are in sterling, in pounds sterling, but which are Scottish and have don't have the Queen on them, for example. Now, all of those things, the question about whether you have the banks in public ownership and what that means in terms of money supply and in terms of what's called quantitative easing, which was done after the financial shocks of 2008-09, which means essentially printing money, all of those things are up for discussion and a debate should there be a yes. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about this whole process. If there is a yes, then there will be 18 months where really quite fundamental questions about the direction of society can be asked and can be argued over. And that we've never really had that chance in the last 30 or 40 years. And I think that's what makes it so exciting. But certainly a public bank and also the question about what kind of public involvement there is in private industry, the question of Britain's role in the world, whether we would join the European Union or NATO or the European currency or stay with the UK currency of the pound. All of these questions become pertinent and things which ordinary people can argue about.
I know that many of those who are in favor of the no vote have used, at least this is what we've been reading in the States, that so many businesses would leave Scotland, banks would leave and businesses would leave, really shaking up the economy.
And that's what's been said. I mean, look, the interesting thing is that all of this stuff has been said in the last 3 weeks after the first poll put yes ahead 3 weeks ago. And so you have to look at this in some kind of context. One of the bits of context is that the Prime Minister, David Cameron, came on television appearing to be on the verge of tears, pleading that Scotland shouldn't leave. And at the same time, it's now transpires, his officials and himself were actually coordinating statements from their supporters in the supermarkets and the banks to say that they would leave Scotland, or to say that prices would go up, or to say that mobile phone contracts would be more difficult in an independent Scotland. So at the same time as him saying we really value Scotland, he was actually organising his own supporters in those businesses to threaten Scottish voters. So there's been an element of that. Now, that shouldn't, of course, dismiss the real questions that there might be about how business would orient to this. But some of this has been what has been called by the Yes campaign Project Fear, which is to create fear amongst voters so that they will be too scared to take what is called in the No campaign's parlance the risk of separation. So mm-hmm. we have to take a little bit of caution with some of that. But on the question specifically of the banks, I mean, it's quite clear that after this orchestration of the banks threat to leave, that the head of one of the banks in Scotland wrote a letter to staff, and in fact supported by the union in the bank, saying that any change would be a matter of simply the registration of the bank in a different city, and that they wouldn't actually be moving any of their branches or staff, mm-hmm. And that jobs would not be threatened. So the actual significance of this has been exaggerated, it seems to me. Mm.
John Oliver had a very funny piece on last week's show. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it. If not, I highly recommend it because it's very funny. No matter where you are politically, his humor is top-notch. Mm-hmm. He was talking, I hadn't heard this before, he said the yes vote is being primarily financed by two Scottish people who won the lottery. Is that right?
Not primarily, but yes, I mean there is some element of that. I mean, to be fair, it is also has been funded by a Scottish businessman who has quite pronounced socially conservative views, and so that's also been part of the argument. So on the one hand, some people who would regard themselves as being on the left end of the Scottish political spectrum are saying you should vote no because the Yes campaign is supported by big business people who are socially conservative. And of course the opposite argument to that is to say, well, the socially conservative people who are in big business are largely supporting the no vote. So yes, there are some weird things about Scottish politics which you can no doubt learn about if you go online, but there are arguments on both sides in relation to that.
Paul in West Bend, hi.
Hi, a question. They're interconnected. If I don't know what the debt is of Britain, but if Scotland, if this cleavage takes place, does Scotland assume a proportionate share of the existing national debt? And then what percentage of the GDP does Scotland contribute to Great Britain? And also, if they do, this cleavage takes place, will the progressive elements in Scotland create a sovereign wealth fund with all the oil that lies off their territorial waters in the ocean?
Well, I think yes is the answer to that last part of your question. That is what will be done. I mean, I think that Venezuela is not a model in many respects, but that that's one of the things that we might learn from Venezuela, which is to use the oil money for socially progressive purposes. Scotland makes up about 10% of UK GDP, and the question of how much debt is assigned would, of course, be a question for negotiation after a yes vote. So one would expect that would go roughly in relation to the proportion of GDP. But, of course, that's open for negotiation, and perhaps there'll be some grandstanding over that. But one would expect that there will be some kind of agreement on that.
Thanks, Paul. Richard in Seattle, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
David, I'd be very interested in your perspective on the English or Welsh or Irish, for that matter, population in Scotland. The vote is obviously open to all Scottish residents, and that would include, I would imagine, a fair proportion of those from other parts of the UK. What are they generally thinking? Is it believed, and how much influence will they have on the vote? I ask this actually as an Anglo-Scottish American myself.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, of course, this is often said that there are many people from, especially from England, but also from Wales and Ireland, who are living in Scotland. Of course, there were many hundreds of thousands of people from Ireland came across to Scotland, especially after the famine in the 1840s, and they remain a visible community in Scotland as well. So that is an important issue. I think we forget also that there are many thousands of Chinese people, people from Pakistan,
right.
In Scotland, and in fact more recently people from Poland as well. Mm-hmm. And then in fact there are campaigns, polls for yes and Asian Scots for independence and all such things. And so that is an important issue. Now, it looks to me from the polls that people who have of English origin are less likely to vote yes than people who are not of English origin. Probably 25% of them will vote yes. And that's a significant margin less than the overall vote. But as you'll see, quite a lot of people of English origin actually voting yes. And there's a campaign group called English Scots for Yes. So you see how that works. The biggest proportion, the biggest ethnic minority in Scotland, if you like, is English, followed closely by the Irish. Mm. On the question of the Scots Asians for independence, I mean, I think you raised, Kathleen, this core question about immigration.
Yes.
And I think it looks to me that overwhelmingly that people of Pakistani origin, Sikhs and Muslims, the few Hindus that we have here, they will overwhelmingly vote yes. And that's a real indication of the new sort of politics of civic nationalism in Scotland since the creation of the Parliament. And as you say, we have in Glasgow, there is a campaign which was started up some years ago, which is called the Glasgow Campaign to Welcome Refugees.
And interesting.
There is a much different orientation towards immigrants and migrants in Scotland than there is in some other parts of the UK. Not to say that there is no racism here, because of course there is racism against many sorts of people. But nevertheless, I think particularly Asian people here feel much less under threat than they do in other parts of the country. And in particular, the whole question of Islamophobia and the terror threat, much less pressing in Scotland than it is in other parts. And partly that's to do with the way in which the government here and the Parliament have conducted themselves in relation to ethnic minorities. So that is quite a notable difference north and south of the border.
And why did Scotland do that, decide to be very officially welcoming?
Well, partly it's because of this social democratic civic nationalism I'm talking about. When you say people who can vote here, anyone who is registered to vote here can vote, whether they are from Senegal or from England or from Wales or wherever. And that's a sense of civic nationalism, not nationalism to do with ethnicity or blood or any of that stuff. Scots who don't live here don't get to vote. And so that's quite an important thing, I think. And so there's the general sense of social democracy and civic nationalism. But also, I think, it's to do with the fact of the anti-war movement. And now, you recall that most people in the UK were opposed to the Iraq War. And certainly there was a very strong feeling of that in Scotland. Mm-hmm. In February 2003, there was a mass demonstration, perhaps the biggest demonstration Glasgow's ever seen, against the Iraq War. And so what happened then was you had the Scottish National Party and many other parties of the left, the Greens, etc., were opposed to the war, and they got a significant electoral mandate from the war for anti-war activities. So you find that yourself with a party in government, the Scottish National Party, which is an affinity with Muslims and against war, in a way that the governments in London didn't have, either the Labour or the Conservative government. So there's a real different sense about that. Now, of course, people who are no voters may argue that nationalism in Scotland is backward and reactionary, and no doubt there are parts of it which are. But there is a palpable difference in the way in which ethnic minorities are treated here than there is in England.
Fascinating. Thank you, Richard, very much for your call. Joey in Waukesha, hi.
Hi, I had a quick question that if this does become a yes vote tomorrow and they move forward and they form their own government, and let's say 2-3 years down the line they decide that they've made a mistake, what can they do to come back and form the UK again?
Wow.
There's a question.
I think all sides are saying that there's no going back, that the yes camp are saying if you don't vote yes now, then you'll not get another chance. There will not be another chance like Quebec had, where Quebec had two referenda. And the no camp are saying you should vote now, because otherwise you'll not get back into the UK. And I think if there is a vote for yes and Scotland does leave the UK, I think that's it. I don't think there's a get-out clause. I don't think there's a sorry-we've-changed-our-mind clause.
Right,
this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity,
yeah.
Like, for good or ill.
And what about the other way? If it's a no vote, then will there be another referendum sometime? And who determines that?
Well, technically, it's determined by Westminster.
Right.
But because the Scottish National Party became the government in a quite a surprise overall majority in 2011, and their policy, one of their key policies was for a referendum. The government was really unable to say no, unlike the Spanish government, which has prohibited a referendum in Catalonia. And so the next time, if there's another Scottish election, and they say that's one of their policies, they haven't said that would be so far, then I guess it would be difficult for the government to say no. But technically, it's the UK government who has the decision-making power to do that.
Hmm. It is so hard to imagine what Scotland is going to be like tomorrow. I mean, to say nothing of what it's been like leading up to this. But half the population is going to be really sad.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if it's a yes, then people will not quite believe it. I mean, people will wake up as if they're waking from a dream and say, did that really happen? And then the real struggle begins of shaping a new Scotland. If it's a no, then yes voters will be very, very sad and upset, and probably some of them will be angry. But what has happened in Scotland in the last 2 years is a huge flowering of political debate. I mean, the fact that 97% of people are now registered to vote shows that there's been a huge increase in involvement with politics. The last general election, we had 53% only voting, and now we have a huge involvement in politics. That's not going to go away easily. And so the whole question about whether we get extra powers to the Scottish Parliament becomes a live and open one. The powers have been promised by the Westminster parties, although there's some scepticism here in Scotland about how sincere they are. But I think it would be difficult for them to roll back on that if there's such a big yes vote as looks likely.
We're going to welcome more phone calls in a moment. This hour, we're talking about what people are voting, and in huge numbers, they are voting in Scotland. It's one simple question: should Scotland be an independent country? And the choices are also simple: yes or no. We're talking about all of that, what led up to it, what the ramifications are, who's on the yes side, who's on the no side, and what the vision is for a Scotland that has broken from the United Kingdom. David Miller is our guest. He's co-editor of Neoliberal Scotland, Class and Society in a Stateless Nation. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Bath, and he is originally from the Edinburgh area. He joins us today by phone from Glasgow, Scotland. More phone calls momentarily. Here is how you reach us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go. Actually, we had a call from somebody because we have our own sets of election concerns here in the United States as to what information you need to vote and what kinds of hours there should be. A listener just wondered, David, about what your voting procedures are. Do you register before the day to vote? Do you need a photo ID when you vote in Scotland?
Yes, you had to register beforehand. The registration for voting finished some 10 or days or 2 weeks ago. And that's when we got the last figures for the last month of over 120,000 people, I think, registering in the last week. And in fact, people, you know, queuing up at the last minute to get their forms in. So that's the case. And what happens then is you get a polling card which comes through your door. And you take that with you, although you don't need to take it with you, and you go down to the polling station and you just say your name and your address and you vote. You don't have to show ID or anything like that. So it's quite an open and easy process.
Uh-huh. Okay. Ray in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. This is a very momentous moment, especially in my life, because I have family ties to Scotland. My great-grandfather was Irish, and my great-grandmother was Scottish, and when they got married, it caused controversy, and they had to move to America. But anyways, besides that, I think Scotland should be independent. I think it'll help with interdependence with all the other countries. I have lived there. I have visited there. They are totally capable of taking care of themselves. They have their culture. And I think this decision, if it comes through, that you will be independent, will greatly add to the world in a variety of ways. And I say good luck, and I'm glad I was alive to see this moment.
Thank you very much. I'm sure people here appreciate that a lot.
Thanks for the call, Ray. I'm wondering how many people, and this is just a guess on your part, but certainly the history, you would have something to say about this. We've got this history of 300 years of a union.
Yeah.
That's a long time. And I'm wondering how many people will go to the polls and, you know, maybe they're on the fence and they'll just say, oh, man, 300 years, I can't vote to overturn that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that's, you know, the earlier I was saying that there are some reasons to believe that there may be a lot more people who might vote yes because it's people who've not been registered before. But I think there's also, you know, there are also reasons to think that the no voters have not been properly represented in the opinion polls. I think yes voters are more likely to explain their views and to put posters in the windows. If you look around the streets of Glasgow or Edinburgh or most other Scottish cities now, you'll see that there's in general a preponderance of yes posters in people's windows. No posters, much less so. And I think possibly that's because no voters don't want to say that they're no voters. And I think you also there's a conjecture phenomenon of people getting into the polling booth and thinking, my heart's with yes, but I'm not sure. It might be too risky, as the no campaign says, and their hand might wobble. So, yes, of course, that's another possibility. We wait with bated breath to find out if the polls are accurate or if they've overrepresented no or overrepresented yes. I mean, any of those three could be the case. And that's what's so dramatic about this, because it's 4.3 million people voting on one question, and it goes on down to the last vote. If it's 2 million, 150,000 and one vote, that wins. And so that's really dramatic.
Yeah, that is dramatic. And that's all they're voting on. There's nothing else on the ballot.
There's nothing else. It's a small ballot paper, in actually quite small type. It says, do you want Scotland to be an independent nation? And you've got yes or no. And it's a very small ballot paper and a very big decision. And people are making it today. You know, in droves and droves they're doing it. So, we will see tonight. I mean, the first ballot results for... I should say that the ballots are being counted in each council area. So there are 32 local councils throughout the whole of Scotland. Some of those, of course, are very remote and in the Highlands and Islands, others big cities like Glasgow and Edinburgh, and they will be brought to the central part of that particular council area, and they will be counted. And then the results will be announced for each council area in turn. The first votes will be announced, the first council areas will be announced approximately 2 o'clock in the morning. That's 4 hours after the polls close at 10, so that's a bit later for you, isn't it?
Yes.
And then they will go through to 6 o'clock in the morning. So there'll be 4 or 5 hours of results coming in, and they will cumulatively build to the final result. We may know quite early on what the pattern's going to be, because there are some council areas where we know that there's likely to be a strong yes vote or a strong no vote, and the extent of those votes will tell us roughly what the pattern's going to be, and people will, of course, be conjecturing and working that out.
Yeah, so you're up all night, right, David?
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine so. So I was just wondering, Northern Ireland has its own set of history here, but Wales, isn't there somewhat of an independence movement in Wales?
There is. I mean, the interesting thing about Wales, it seems to me, is that the Wales got its an assembly at the same time as Scotland got a parliament. There's a significance in the word assembly as opposed to parliament, because the Welsh have less powers. And as a result, they've been less able to defend themselves against some of the socially conservative things that have happened in England. But it's clear that there has been pressure for Wales to go devolved or independent for some considerable time. It just isn't as strong politically, I think, in Wales as it is in Scotland. And without wanting to speak for Welsh nationalists, I think it's more of a cultural nationalism in Wales, where the language is much more important.
I see.
The whole question of language is not nearly as important as Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Ray, thanks for your call. Tim in Green Bay, hi.
Hello?
Yes, Tim, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, I tuned in late, did you explain devolution? And second question, what is Britain offering as a reward if you stay in the United Kingdom?
I did try and explain devolution, although if you've not heard about it before, it might be quite complex. Certainly what happened briefly was that in 1997, the incoming Labour government of Tony Blair offered a referendum for Scotland on whether it should have a a parliament. People voted in favour of that parliament. That meant that powers on health, on education, on some aspects of welfare were devolved to the Scottish Parliament, whereas other powers like defence, foreign policy, macroeconomic policy were retained by Westminster. And as a result, we have had that experience since 1999 of diverging policies in relation to health, education, etc. And that's one of the reasons why there's a demand for independence. As to what the UK has offered, well, that's slightly unclear because the British government, the Cameron government, would not allow the Scottish government, the SNP-led government, to put on the ballot a second question. They wanted to put on the ballot a second question. They wanted to have, should Scotland be an independent nation? That's one question. And a second question, should there be further powers devolved to the Scottish Parliament? But the British government wouldn't let them do that. And that probably looks like a tactical mistake in retrospect, since yes votes seem to be much more numerous than they had anticipated. But as a result of that, it now seems that all political parties in Scotland believe that there should be more powers for the Scottish Parliament, and the three leaders of the main parties, Labour, Conservative, Lib Dem, have offered extra powers. But it's not really clear exactly what that would mean. They've pledged that there would be certain powers. They've signed it when the polls started to get close. But there's a bit of scepticism in Scotland about what they exactly mean. And it probably would mean control over broadcasting, probably more tax-raising powers, and other things like that. But it's not entirely clear. It's not really something which is motivating people, the fact that they're offering the powers. It may be affecting some voters. I certainly have met people who are saying they're no voters, but who would have voted for greater powers for the Scottish Parliament. So maybe that is having an effect at the margins, but what they're actually explicitly offering is very unclear.
Thank you, Tim. Marion Washburn, hi.
Hi. I'm curious about your guest's opinion on two quick points. My understanding is that some of the folks who are opposed to independence, it is because they are concerned about Scotland becoming a petro state, oil state, with all the downsides of that, and also a tax haven for corporations. The second question is about, I understand that some that are for independence, it's extremely important to them for us to understand that this is about self-determination and not about some narrow, knee-jerk, nationalistic fervor.
Yes, well, to take the second question first, yes, I think it's pretty clear that it's not about a narrow nationalistic fervour, that it's a civic nationalism, which is about being disenchanted with the politics of Westminster, where politics has become more and more distant from ordinary people. The extent to which we can influence politics in Westminster has become harder and harder. And so that's the key reason, it seems to me, why people are keen on independence. If it was just a question of narrow nationalists and people who had long beards and wore kilts, then there wouldn't be nearly so much support for it as there is. On the question of the petrostate, I don't think that's much of a concern here. And certainly the question of tax havens hasn't been an argument in the campaign. And let me say two things about that. One is that it's certainly the case that there are a number of tax havens which are overseen by the British government, not least of which in the Channel Islands and other British colonies, the British Virgin Islands, which are overseen by Britain in the sense that they're allowed to operate. And there's a real argument for closing those loopholes to force those who work in Britain to pay proper taxes, meaning the people who are the very rich and the ultra-rich. I have not seen any argument which would suggest that Britain would become a tax haven. I think that would go completely against the logic of the argument for independence and would make any party which supported it suffer at the opinion polls and at the ballot box. So I think that's one question. I think that there is a question about the economic policies of the Scottish National Party. Although the Scottish National Party is a nationalist party, and it is on social issues, it's quite liberal and social democratic. On economic issues, it is quite neoliberal. And so, although it's to the left of the Labour Party, It is on economic issues quite neoliberal and would want to decrease corporation tax, which I think many voters in this country would think was a bad idea. So that's one of the key battlegrounds, it seems to me, if there is a yes vote, on the extent to which the Scottish National Party can pursue that policy of cutting corporate taxation.
David, what an exciting day in Scotland. I thank you so much for being with us this hour. It was just fascinating. Thank
it's
you.
A pleasure.
Thanks. David Miller, our guest this hour. David is co-editor of the Neoliberal Scotland, Class and Society in a Stateless Nation. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Bath. He grew up in Edinburgh. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to Scott Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We talk about Milwaukee Hour 2.